We have Eileen Godofsky Moreno, the author of a new cookbook, The Colorful Family Table, Seasonal Plant-Based Recipes for the Whole Family. Hi, Eileen. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I was just talking with Benjamin Wergaff. I don't know if you heard any of that interview. His book is intelligent, it's dense, it touches on a lot of aspects of our meat culture. And there are many investors today that are looking for new ideas and businesses to invest in and support. And a lot of them are related to either making plant-based meats or other plant-based products that are like animal products, and as well as cultured meat, which we just spoke about. Personally, I think we need more people like you that are putting together whole, minimally processed plant foods in beautiful, nutritious, and delicious ways. We need to be cooking for people and putting these things in their mouth and knowing, letting people know that nature has already provided us with so many different, wonderful, colorful foods that not only are delicious, but are the best things for our health and for the planet. And in the last segment, I didn't even have time to touch on the health, because if people are interested in eating cultured meat because they like to eat meat, we have no idea how that's going to impact our health. We already know about how animals negatively impact our health today. And I'm sorry I didn't get to talk about that before, but I just wanted to get that out. Anyway, so I appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thank you so much. I would say I don't know what the future holds with the meat substitutes and the plant-based meats and whatnot, and all of that's growing, but the foods that have been growing on this planet for thousands and thousands of years are there, and they're delicious, and I agree. I think that there's already so much delicious food that we can go find at the farmer's market. I would encourage people to just get, you know, start with their colors, as, you know, the title of my book says.
I wanted to say that the thing that I love the most about your book were the adorable little pictures of your older daughter that you call Baby V. When I was little, natural curly red hair. I was trying to think of what that cartoon character said in the Peanuts Charlie Brown thing. Anyway, I have naturally curly red hair, and I kind of looked like her when I was little.
Oh,
those little
so
tosses of red hair. So I appreciated pictures of her in the book.
Oh, yeah, she's a cutie.
And I also wanted to say that there's a lot of creativity in this book, and I feel like this is the kind of food that I eat. This is the kind of food that I make, and I appreciated thumbing through it because I got some new ideas on how to use my same favorite ingredients that are fabulous. And I started to dog-ear the recipes that I wanted to point out, and then I was like, the whole book was dog-eared. So
oh my gosh, I love that.
But we could talk about a few. So when you're raising a family, I don't know. I don't have children, but I talk to a lot of people who do. And it's so challenging, especially in today's world where there's so many different influences. I was just talking last week to Bettina Elias Siegel, who just wrote a book called Kid Food. And there's so much out there. And it's incredible what's out there that's approved by our government that is so dangerous for our children.
Yeah, it's really scary to look at ingredients on many of the foods that are the basis of a lot of kids' diets.
It's scary. And so you have a lot of work to do. And as I mentioned briefly with my last guest, the importance of education and training, and it needs to start young, where as babies and toddlers and young children, we are fed whole, minimally processed, nutritious foods and learn along the way and help to prepare them and why they're important. And that's why what you're doing is so important.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think just starting young, I have my girls in the kitchen with me. It's not always the easiest thing in the world, but I think it's really important for them to see the sweet potato when I'm scrubbing it and getting ready to roast it, as opposed to just having it for dinner when it's already cooked and whatnot, and just seeing the start to finish and seeing that from a young age. And I didn't grow up with that, and I didn't learn most things about where our food actually comes from until I was in my 20s. And so it's very important for me that my daughters and their entire generation has a better understanding of how our food system works than people of, say, like my generation and even older. We're very out of touch with it because food came from boxes and the freezer section and packages and whatnot.
My partner Gary talks about how when he was growing up and his mom was in the kitchen, she just pulled out the oven drawer and had him sit in it. He would play with pots and things and got a little unwieldy, but that was his beginning, learning in the kitchen. So let's talk about some recipes. One that popped out to me are the collie brock tots.
Oh, yes. Those are similar to tater tots, which are, as you know, a pretty typical kid freezer food. But my version, the main ingredients are cauliflower and broccoli. And it's just a little bit of a different spin on it. There's also chickpeas. So it's a lot, and they're not fried. So it's really just like a little handheld food that I think it's the right size for a lot of kids and adults. I mean, these are delicious. This is by no means a quote-unquote kids food. This is for the whole family, and just something that's sort of that size that you can dip in a delicious sauce is pretty much always a hit with kids.
Well, finger food is definitely important. You also have roasted stuffed figs, which is genius because figs, I don't know how many people do this in the United States, but combining figs with cheese has been a popular thing over time.
Yes, yeah, that was definitely inspired by recipes I've seen on menus that weren't vegan. And I don't think I'd ever had a vegan version of, you know, a fig and cheese combination before I sort of came up with this one. But my daughter was going crazy over figs the summer before last, when I was writing the book. And we're coming up with all sorts of different combinations for it. And that was really the one that we liked the best.
Well, it looks really, really yummy. Okay, and another one that popped out is the macaroni and cheese, the pumpkin stuffed pumpkin mac and cheese. Gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the most popular recipe on my blog has been the sweet potato mac and cheese, where the base is a roasted sweet potato, and then there's nutritional yeast and tahini, and that's sort of been a classic. Like, all of my readers who have been with me for a long time know it, and so the pumpkin spin was just a really fun way to present it, and that's within the fall chapter, and since the book is organized by season, I wanted to have this recipe that could really be like a gorgeous centerpiece for a fall party or a Thanksgiving, because it's served within the pumpkin and it just makes it a little bit more fun.
I love stuffing things. So it's just something fun about taking a food like a squash or a pumpkin, which is a squash, or a potato or a sweet potato, or I love those round zucchinis.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of things, vegetables, that you can take the top off, scoop out, fill it with something yummy, bake it, and then serve it. It's just fun.
I agree, and it makes it feel more festive. And if you're having guests over, it just really makes a nice centerpiece. And even if you're not having guests over, if it looks good, it's going to taste that much better right from the get-go.
So we have a wide range of cuisine in the plant-based vegan world. And some people are gluten-free, some people are salt, sugar, and oil-free. Your recipes tend to be, they have oil and sweeteners and salt, but they tend to be low on those things, which is a good choice.
I'm sorry, we'll go on.
I'm done. You said. Tell me about your choice.
I do eat salt, sugar, and oil. I know some people are not eating those foods. For me, I find eating high quality oils is fine. Salt, you know, I think the quality is really what the big difference is for me. So I'll get Himalayan salt or sea salt as opposed to just table salt, because the salt that has nutritional value, that works for me and for my family. I know some people don't use those, and I think they're pretty easy ways to skip it. But for the most part, I like to, unless I'm having a delicious dessert and I really want to go for it and make something decadent, I don't really want added sugar to my food unless I'm consciously making something that I want to be high in sugar. And so I'll use maple syrup as a sweetener sometimes, or I'll use dates to add something sweet or fruit in a recipe instead of adding sugar, because I don't want to overconsume sugar. I want to save my sugar for a really amazing dessert. And as far as oil goes, I don't overdo it. I guess I just use the amount that feels right, tastes right. And I think getting high quality organic extra virgin olive oil and virgin coconut oil and getting the higher quality types of oils makes a really big difference.
I'm looking at apple almond cookies, and they look great. I haven't made them yet. And they only have a quarter cup of maple syrup, so there isn't a lot of added sugar to it, although it does have some chocolate chips or raisins in them. But here is something that's made with nutritious whole foods, almond flour and spices, and apple, which is naturally sweet, and just a little bit of sweetness, added sweetness, but not too much.
Right. I love this recipe, because if I want to give my girls a treat, you know, I think desserts should be a great part of life, but I don't want to send my 3-year-old into a sugar coma. And I think having recipes on hand that are they're sweet and they're delicious and it's a beautiful dessert, but they're, you know, not totally overloaded with sugar is really important as a parent. And for myself, I can feel the difference when I eat this type of cookie as opposed to if I eat a bakery cookie that is made with sugar and flour and whatnot. And I'm not saying I don't eat those things, because I do like those from time to time, but if I can make something from whole ingredients and use less sugar that tastes just as good, I would love to do that for when I'm baking at home.
I'm just turning the page here, and there are a lot of great photographs in here, and food photography is so important when you're sharing recipes so people can get an idea and get excited about it. I'm looking at your brown sugar and butternut squash Pop-Tarts, and this must be so much fun for kids.
Yes, I lived off Pop-Tarts as a kid, and I just remember them being the most fun food, and I mean, the ingredient list is terrifying, so I don't buy them for my family. I don't even know if they're what's in them. I'm assuming they're not vegan. It's been so many years since I've had them, but I wanted to be able to make something that was that handheld pastry, cookie, breakfasty type of thing, but the ingredient list is that much better. And this is something that it's a treat, but it could be a breakfasty type of treat.
Well, I'm thinking I have to make this or something like it. And I actually think some Pop-Tarts are vegan. I'm not sure, but I think they are. But I'm remembering what they taste like, and I haven't had one in 40, 50 years. But I can remember the taste. And I'm thinking now I wouldn't like them, because they have flavors that I have learned not to like. And, you know, it's a fascinating thing. I'm going to jump off in a different direction for a moment, because I'm still thinking about the guest that I spoke with in the first part of the show, where one of the ideas was that we cannot create a vegetarian or vegan world, and so we have to come up with plant meats and cultured meats, because that's what people want. And I have a hard time really believing that. I have greater faith in humanity, and I think that it's all about programming and marketing and manipulation, and we're taught to like certain foods because it's surrounded with commercials and imagery, and we're so easy to manipulate. And then there's the salt, oil, and sugar. And I was taught to like a Pop-Tart. And then I had to teach myself and readapt and wean myself off of artificial flavors and sugars and so much sugar, so much sugar, so much oil, and introduce healthier foods. So my tastes have changed, and I wouldn't even like Captain Crunch and Fruit Loops and all those sugary things that I ate as a kid. That sounds awful to me today. So I appreciate your recipe, and I think we can change. I think there is hope to change the palate of Americans and all over the world in terms of what we eat. It's going to be a lot of work, though.
Well, I agree with you. I think once you get those artificial flavors and artificial sweetness out of your system, and then you go back and taste like a fresh apple and how sweet that is, your taste buds recalibrate. And I agree with you. I don't think I would want to eat a traditional Pop-Tart. I don't think I would like it if I took a bite of it now, because my palate has changed. And, you know, once you're used to eating these whole foods, these real foods, you just don't respond the same to the artificial things, and it makes you feel terrible. Your body won't feel good after you've had it out of your system for so long. It won't feel good to go back to it. So, yeah, I guess maybe I'm with you. I'm optimistic that people really can change, and I think our palates are changing and our interests in food are changing as a whole.
Well, I just think that the young people today, yourself and your children, are learning more. Now, there are many young people today and old people today that don't know where their kitchen is, and they don't want to prepare food, and they like convenience, but at least many of them are becoming educated and are looking for foods that they can buy in a store that are prepared, or in a restaurant that are less processed, more whole, and more plant-based.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, so tell me, I haven't made it, of course, but you have a recipe, brisket-ish.
Yes.
What does it taste like?
So that is a vegetable dish. There's no meat substitute. It's just, well, there's tempeh in it, but I'm not trying to create a recipe that is meaty and tastes like a real brisket, but for me, my family at all the holidays, my grandmother would make brisket, and it would have this gravy on it and potatoes and carrots, and it was just like warm and cozy meal. And so my goal was to make something that had the essence of my grandmother's brisket. So it has a thick gravy and it's got the vegetables in it and whatnot, and it's not supposed to taste meaty, but it's delicious in a different way that's reminiscent of the original. And that's such an easy recipe, because all you do is toss everything with the gravy, and then you put it in the oven, and then it's done.
I love dishes like that, roasted root vegetables that you put in the oven. You might splash balsamic vinegar or some kind of tasty sauce, and it's easy, and there's something so comforting about them.
Definitely. Those types of root vegetables, foods that grow in the ground, are literally grounding to our bodies, and eating those types of foods this time of the year just feels so good, and it feels as if your grandmother is making you a meal. It's got that sort of homey, comforting essence.
Okay, I'm looking at the jackfruit Reuben, which is made with red sauerkraut. Do you make your own, or do you get it from somewhere?
I do. I love to make sauerkraut. I also buy it in the store sometimes because I like to try different sauerkrauts that are out there, but I really enjoy making it at home because it's so easy. Cabbage is not an expensive vegetable, and after you get the technique down, it's kind of difficult to mess up, and so I love making sauerkraut at home. I have a recipe on my website for a hot pink sauerkraut, which is what I used in the photo for the jackfruit Reuben, which is why it has that really vibrant pink, and all the hot pink kraut is one green cabbage and one red cabbage made together, and it has this really vibrant color once it starts fermenting.
No, I'm going to have to try that. I do like making cabbage. Definitely. I love red sauerkraut. I mean, I do like making sauerkraut. I like all cabbages, but I love making sauerkraut. It's really easy, and I love it. And I've backed off on how much salt I add because I don't want it to be too salty. And that's one of the nice things about being able to make your own, is you can control what's in it.
Right. Exactly.
All right. I'm thumbing here, doing some more thumbing over these gorgeous photos. And I remember there were a few other things that I wanted to talk about. hungry. Okay. Let's see. French toast and French toast casserole. I mean, come on.
we love that recipe in my house.
Well, okay, so that's one of the things I'm thinking about. There are a number of recipes in here. There are crisps. Oh, there's this apple dish, and there's a, gosh, I don't have the exact recipes in front of me. There's stewed apples, and there's a poached pear dish in here, and I want people to experience these desserts that are made from fruit, minimal ingredients, easy to make, and are intoxicatingly delicious, as nature intended.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the book is organized by season, and so the rest of the apple, stewed apples you mentioned, is in the fall chapter, the pear is in the winter, and when you get a fresh apple or a fresh pear at its peak season, it's going to be so sweet and so flavorful that you can really make a delicious dessert that doesn't rely on sugar and chocolate and whatnot, and it can just be so full of flavor. And I think that is something that we forget about because chocolate chip cookies are delicious.
Exactly. I love when I get, it could be a pear. I'm trying to think of some other fruits that I had recently that were ripe. It's important to eat fruits, especially that are ripe, folks. I mean, a lot of times you get a pear. Most of the time when I get a pear in a store, it's hard. It's not ready. It needs to be really soft and custardy-like. But when you get a good quality fruit like that, there is a floral fragrance that comes with it. Mm-hmm, and it's supposed to be there, which is important because a lot of our industrial foods, tomatoes and fruits, they have no taste.
Right. Unless you're getting it from a farmer's market or growing it in your backyard, I think we forget how delicious a lot of these foods taste when they're fresh.
Yes. Okay. So we just have a few minutes left. Tell me, you have The Colorful Kitchen, and that's a blog along with your and you also have a cookbook called The Colorful Kitchen. Can you tell me a little bit about the history of The Colorful Kitchen?
Yes, so I started the blog, The Colorful Kitchen, about 6 years ago. And then my first cookbook, which is also titled The Colorful Kitchen, came out 2 years ago. And my new cookbook, The Colorful Family Table, just came out last week. And so it's been a long journey. I would say the evolution from the blog to the cookbook was really me going a little bit deeper into why eating this way is so important to me. And with my new book, I'm focused very much on families and how we can help the next generation eat more colors, be healthier than we are, and treat our planet better than we have. And that's sort of where I'm at now.
Very nice. Well, I recommend people visit your website, and that's thecolorfulkitchen.com?
Yes.
Very good. And take a look at that. I'm going to be checking out your pink sauerkraut recipe. Hot pink sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Excellent. And look into The Colorful Family Table that we just talked about, a number of wonderful seasonal plant-based recipes for the whole family. Thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much. This was a great chat.
Okay, thank you. You're doing important work. Okay, everybody, we have like a minute left. And I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank you for caring about food. I really believe that we can change this world and nourish everyone and reduce or eliminate chronic diseases today, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, with diet and lifestyle. It's a tough sell. Some people are getting it. We need to share these recipes. We need to make these recipes. We need to put them in people's mouths. And that's our work. And I hope you're making some of these recipes getting the cookbook, sharing them with people. And the holidays are coming up. This is not a time to be a consumer and buy stuff and give away stuff that we don't need. This is a time to be creative, to be artistic. Maybe you can share recipes or make food and give them to people, something that's nutritious and useful rather than something that's ephemeral and wasteful. Food for thought. Thank you for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com, where there are loads of free recipes. And check out my blog, What Vegans Eat. Remember, everybody, have a delicious week.